Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You were listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am back yet again with Dom. Dom, how are you this week?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well as well, Dom. Here we are back, of course, to talk about episode 5 of Survivor: Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers. Although I think it is safe to say we've already discarded with that theme. When are we going to see that theme brought back up over the course of this season?
Are we going to get a Healers versus Heroes versus Hustlers 2 at some point?
That's a good question. I would at this point say that the smart money is on no, but you never know. Like, what, depending on how long Survivor stays on the air, we may be getting like Brains versus Beauty versus Bronze 7. You know, fingers crossed this show is still on in the year 2027 or whatever. It wouldn't shock me to death to see them break out Healers versus Heroes versus Hustlers 2. And maybe it will be at the point where they've already forgotten that they did it the first time.
Yeah, this is what disturbs me, though, because I can't work out if, for them, at this point, they think this theme has been a success or not. Like, if you're Jeff in the production castle, compound, whatever kind of structure they have over there, what are you thinking about how well this theme played into this season?
Well, based on the report that you gave me, I think it was last week, about how the ratings have been doing a lot better than at least last season, and generally, I think they've just been really high on the ratings overall this season, I would imagine that is the barometer for success for them, and that's why they do these kind of things. So I would imagine they are very happy about how this theme has been playing out, even if it didn't, on the TV episodes, end up making a huge deal.
Right, but do you think they put any work at all into distinguishing between our ratings are high, if they are? And I say that because I put no research into that. This was just knowledge that I heard from other people, so we've got this whole, like, telephone game going on here. But assuming the ratings are high and that's the metric they're using, which
they might not be.
Likely,
they might not be high ratings.
No. But if they are, safe to say that's the metric they're using. Do you think they put any effort into distinguishing between our ratings are high because everyone was in love with the theme and that was a great idea, Jeff, and you should do that again at some point, or because we just had a good cast this year, or because it's just the time of year and this is the season that people usually tune in for, or it's not going up against any other popular shows? Do you think they actually get that granular, or do they just think what they want to think out of that?
Well, I think they do try to get that granular, and one of the things that we're seeing this season, and I mean, I guess kind of spoiler alert for Survivor: Ghost Island, ooh, right around the corner, very Halloween themed. These casts are very young compared to a lot of the casts that they've had in the past, and that's been attributed to, I think, people saying, oh, they loved Millennials versus Gen X, and they think that the reason that was such a great season is because of all the Millennials, and now they want to put all these Millennials on the show and have, you know, 80% of the cast be from that generation, at least 80% be from that generation. I do think they are trying to figure out what is really clicking with the viewers, but I don't think, with that particular example in mind of wanting all these young people out there, I don't know if that's even necessarily correct, but I do think they are trying, and I think generally they do have a good idea of what the audience likes versus does not like.
That's why they cast people like Joe Del Campo. He can single-handedly bring the average up. He by himself pays for like 4 or 5 20-year-olds they can put in the next cast.
Right. It's kind of like if the Koch brothers, you know, the tweets that are making the rounds about, like, if the Koch brothers get a $10 billion tax break and I get a $0 tax break, hey, we average a $5 billion tax break. Joe is really pumping the age average up there for everyone else. Yeah, I think you're right. But yeah, so okay, Dom, that is, we've already swapped. We did that last week. The theme is officially over, at least in the official capacity for this season. It may come up later on, I'm sure, you know, come finale time, Jeff will be talking about everyone who's in there with a real chance at winning and how they really embody whatever starting tribe they were on. But until we get to that point, let's dive in here to episode 5. But I suppose just quickly before we do, I wanted to bring up one thing that we just kind of went on a tangent about last week that we had a little bit of feedback on. And that was, I brought up, like, if Devin had his vote canceled, he's still eligible to leave. And, like, had he left there, where would he rank in, like, the pantheon of, like, the all-time most screwed people in Survivor history? Screwed in the sense of, like, by these very non-standard twists. I wouldn't consider people who just swap poorly, like, screwed in the conventional sense. Like, I think Rourke just swapped poorly. I wouldn't say she was screwed out of Survivor. But the people that we cited were Aaron from Survivor China, who just got handpicked to go over to the other tribe so they could immediately vote him out. And then Suri having that go from a final three down to a final two in Micronesia just because of a random production decision at the end. A couple others that were brought up to me, and I don't know if you've had any brought up to you or if you've thought of any others, but people screwed by these kind of non-standard twists that I agree with. First of all, the entire Morgan tribe on Pearl Islands, when Lil comes back from the Outcasts, when she's been voted out of the game, I understand that Andrew Savage in particular did not handle that situation well and might have handled it as poorly as humanly possible. But still, that's a really brutal situation where you have this woman that you voted out come back at the merge, and now she is the one deciding which tribe is going to have the upper hand going forward.
Yeah, I think it's fundamental to at least early game Survivor that the people you vote out, you can almost be as aggressive or as obnoxious as you like, knowing that they can't come back to haunt you in any real sense. And I like the karmic justice almost of that being overturned, but I don't think it's fair for the game, really, right. Unless people know about it in advance, which they obviously didn't, because if you do, then the entire twist doesn't work properly. So, yeah, Morgans, however sympathetic you might think they are as TV characters, I think certainly got screwed by that twist. Any others that you think are good candidates, though?
I do have one other one, and just to quickly close, though, I don't think it's a coincidence that we've never seen the Outcast twist back again, and I don't think we ever will see the Outcast twist back again. Although, now that we are very close to 15 years later, I don't know if I would object to seeing the Outcast twist back again. We'll just throw it at the wall one more time. It's been so long since we've done it. It'd be riveting TV. I would be okay with that at this point.
Yep. What could possibly go wrong? He asks now, and then when the season starts, I think it'll become apparent very quickly just exactly what could go wrong.
Yeah. Well, the other one, and one of these two, at least one of these two examples, was brought to my attention by official accountant of the podcast, AJ Van Gilder. I don't remember who the other one was credited to. It might have also been AJ, but nonetheless, the other person is Malcolm, as recently as last season, and I can't believe we didn't remember this when talking about it last week. Obviously a very non-standard twist, having both teams go to Tribal Council pre-merge and ending up leaving because of that and because of an idol in a spot where I would feel comfortable saying he's basically never leaving anytime soon there under any kind of normal circumstances, right?
Yeah, I know I had a strong opinion a good 7 months ago now about just how fair that twist was. I can't remember what that opinion was, so I'm just working from scratch here. I wouldn't place him in that same category, I think. It's the twist was unique, certainly, and I think it's likely to screw over somebody like Malcolm. I don't think that Malcolm himself can say that it was fundamentally unfair, though, really.
Okay.
Although maybe past me would strenuously disagree with that and would have very good counter-arguments, I'm sure.
I believe our conclusion was that it was a fair twist in that it did not inherently favor or disadvantage any particular players, although you're right that it's almost always going to be like one of the more perceived power players who ends up being the victim of it. I think we said it was fair theoretically, but just a bad twist in general, and one that they should have seen coming, as far as like, you're going to have some heavy hitter go down here when you do this, and it's not going to look good.
Yeah, that sounds like something that I would say.
It's something that I said, and then you piggybacked onto, I think. That's my recollection of how all of that played out. But if people have, I suppose, any others that we may be still forgetting, which is very much possible, you can, of course, be tweeting us. He is at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. All right, let's move into this new episode here now, Dom. And we just had this blue team at the last Tribal Council go and vote out Alan. Devin's vote got canceled. There was an idol played by Joe. It was all very crazy. And this episode leads in with Ashley talking about how crazy all of that was and just how crazy Joe is in general, and how big of a presence he's been making himself. But not only crazy, Dom, she says, you know, I knew you were crazy, but you're crazy and smart. And, this is a combination we've seen have success on Survivor before. Is this maybe a reason to be believing in Joe?
Yeah, that's the combination that I personally aspire to be. So it's good to see that do so well on Survivor. I think the jury is still out on Joe, if he even makes it to the jury phase, which is certainly not a guarantee. But yeah, so far what we've seen from Joe is great. And what have you been making of Joe's Twitter presence? Because I know that's something that has been the talk of the town this week.
I almost tweeted this earlier today and then thought better of it. But how on earth does Joe have 280 characters? How did he become one of the people who got selected for 280 characters? And I don't follow Joe on Twitter yet, but I do see his tweets pop up on my timeline because other people respond to or like favorite them, and Twitter has absolutely no chill in the year 2017.
Yeah, the idea of not of typing out a tweet and then thinking better of it is never in Joe's wheelhouse. I don't think you can relate to that on any level at all.
It's not usually in my wheelhouse, but when I'm talking, say, like, at least arguably talking shit about a current survivor, I'm going to think twice about sending it out.
And you know that if Joe sees it, he will come back at you as well. Like, he's not just going to let that sit out there.
Right. The other part was, given just how interesting, I'm going to say, he has seemed on Twitter, I didn't want to get blocked by Joe, like, right away into the season.
Yeah, Troy-san, you can handle that. Everyone's getting blocked by Troy-san. Getting blocked by Joe is not a great start.
Yeah, but I'm with you. Like, I think Joe, I would say at this point, Joe, I envision being there at the merge just because, and I didn't do the math on this until I just saw the four of them sitting around, like, the campfire or whatever, but if we look at this team, we have Joe, Desi, Ashley, and Devin, and the other teams are going to be playing in teams of four to compete against them. What challenge is this group losing at, other than maybe something that's like hardcore puzzle oriented, but anything, it seems like, where the physicality is going to be one of the major deciding factors. I have to feel like this group is going to be in really good shape, pardon the pun.
I would agree. The other teams don't seem that weak. I don't think there's a weak link, other than I guess Ryan did not acquit himself that well in this challenge, but in general, he seems to be okay. And I guess that's the point. You don't want any one team to be noticeably weaker. So I think one of the pluses of the season that maybe we haven't talked about that much is the challenges have seemed quite competitive, even though at some points one team has just run away with it.
And totally, I think that's, yeah.
I think that's also a selling point of having three tribes, maybe, when if there is a challenge which one tribe absolutely dominates, then you still get some suspense over what the other two teams are going to do.
Yeah, and this is another thing. You're right. Then on the yellow team, where they have Ryan, Allie, Chrissy, and Rourke, and then JP, and they're the group that goes to this vote this round. I didn't even catch this the first time and didn't even think in these terms as I was watching it the first time, but like, they all seem to be just framing it in terms of like, obviously we can't get rid of JP, because if we do that, we just lose every challenge going forward. And like, JP, even though he's on the tribe that's going to tribal council and that might go to another tribal council and doesn't really seem to have any solid allies in there, I would almost say that JP was like the safest person this round, because none of them felt remotely comfortable getting rid of him.
What's your take on that debate? Because you see this a lot with teams that are losing a lot, because you can either say, well, we need to keep our strongest players just to maintain any chance at all that we can bring this back. Or you can say, well, these supposedly great challenge competitors, they're not doing that much for us at the moment. So why not make what we think is the strategically best move if that involves voting them out instead?
So I think this is a bit of a different question than it would be to go back to the classic, and I think just a truly perfect example of this kind of strength or loyalty question pre-merge, the Mat Singh tribe, where Malcolm and Denise were deciding between booting Angie Layton, who I think they would imagine would be totally loyal to them, or Russell Swan, who might give them a chance at winning a challenge before a swap or a merge, which they hadn't done yet. And they ended up keeping Russell, and I remember coming in this that week saying, I think they made the wrong decision. I think in that context where they've been together the whole time, they can really count on Angie if they do make it through with her. I would take, you know, like, the decision comes down to how you think this is going to go, if that person is going to be there come the next evolution of the game, whether it's a swap or a merge. Because, which, you know, if we just lose the next one, we'll vote both of them out and it doesn't make a difference what order they go. So the question is, when it comes to strength or loyalty in that context, I am all about keeping the more loyal person that come a swap or a merge is going to do you a lot more favors politically, and the challenges are essentially going to be a wash. Whereas in this kind of scenario, this is not their initial tribe. These are people that they know have already had a lot of time to build bonds with the people on their first teams, and I would probably be viewing strength much more as a priority than I would be in a Mat Singh initial tribe situation going forward here, where I'm just trying to avoid tribal council and keep as many of the people that I feel good about alive for the merge. What about you? Mm-hmm. Where do you fall on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think in general, you can have the physically strongest team that you want, but that's not going to do anything for you if your tribe is split down the middle, if you don't have strength mentally as a unit, and if you don't even have the physical strength, if that's not even doing anything for you, then I just trying to cling to that because that's what you do, because you have to win at challenges, just that's not going to get you anywhere.
Right, right. And actually, to go back to Joe on this blue team, we will later in this episode go on to see Mike and Jessica use that initial idol clue that they got from the Healers tribe to find the idol on the Red Beach. We still have not seen Joe even looking for the idol. I have to imagine he's been looking, but we haven't seen him find it. And I would guess that if he was looking that hard, he would know where it was, more or less. Because I'm imagining that idol is also by the well. I can't imagine it would be anywhere else. So what is the over-under on when Joe is going to get this idol? Or might someone else sneak in, find whatever the new tree clue is, and get it before him?
I am honestly shocked that he hasn't found it already, unless... Right. Maybe someone else found it and they're deliberately showing this out of order for some reason to mess with the timeline a bit. And this is where the Tony comparisons really start to fall apart. Because if that was Tony, he would have been there in view of everyone within 5 minutes, just scrabbling around the well trying to dig it up. And then even if he didn't find it, he would have found like a rock and pretended that was a fake idol or something. Or at the very least, we would have heard about it. And it's like this eerie silence almost from Joe. Like you would think, even if... he didn't end up finding it, even if someone caught him or it didn't go that well, we would at least have seen an attempt by now. So the fact that we haven't is pretty surprising.
Right, to bring Tony into it. If Tony got the first idol the way that Joe did, first of all, he never would have shared the clue with Cole, as we've been over. And maybe he never would have even deciphered it himself. But say he found that first clue at the healer's well and then gets swapped onto a new team, I promise you, the only thing running through Tony's mind when he gets to that beach is, how do I get to the well ASAP? That is the easy number one priority for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's why I brought it up. It's staggering to me that we haven't seen Joe find it, although maybe he did go and immediately find it, and they'll just insert it at a time in a future episode where they just had more screen time for that week or whatever, because it probably, like I've mentioned, I'm guessing that Joe... and everyone on this tribe is, I'm thinking, going to be there at the merge, but maybe that's wrong. But anyway, I brought up that Ashley was the one who was framing all of this about Joe, and I'm curious where you're at on Ashley as well, because I do feel like we're seeing a decent amount of her, and what we're seeing is good, but I'm not hearing her, at least in the circles that I've been running in, as being talked about that much.
I think it's the same issue that I brought up last week of, even if Ashley is doing well, her style of gameplay and just her personality is such that you still wouldn't be hearing that much about her, both on screen and among the hype that goes around the Survivor fan base. So yeah, I think Ashley seemed like she rebounded from Alan getting voted out pretty well. I imagine she's going to be there long enough to reconnect with JP, who I think I agree with you that he is the safest person in the game at this point, because who is really going to vote him out? Although Ashley... I wonder, so if Ryan actually is the type of player that he wants to be, and which some people are arguing he is portraying himself as, of this social mastermind who can bring everyone together, then maybe he can keep Annie and Chrissy both on board, and JP's the obvious man out there. But other than that, I think JP is solid. So yeah, I think maybe the two of them will get to reunite. And when they do, I think that they'll have a lot of room to play. And Ashley will be the one, I imagine, deciding who goes where.
Right, exactly. I actually, I know I brought this up in a previous podcast like a couple weeks ago. I think Ashley would have been better off swapping away from JP and then having him get voted off before the merge, and she gets to go in there as a real total free agent. But you're right that it does look like both of them are going to be there and in a pretty good spot as far as I can tell. I would frankly be thinking Ashley... She's definitely in my mix for potential winners, but more to the point, for Ashley, I think she is maybe the top of my list as far as like a last longer, barring maybe one or two people. Like, I think she is one of the safest people for the longest amount of time. I don't see how Ashley's going to be in any kind of unfavorable circumstances anytime soon or anytime early after the merge. She really seems to be in a good spot and playing plenty fine to be around for the long haul as far as I can tell. So I guess let's quickly detour over to Desi, who we got to hear a little bit from on this blue team this week. It sounds like that if they do go back to another vote, Ashley and Devin, at least as far as Ashley is concerned, are going to try to flip Desi and get her to turn on Joe. Do you feel like that's realistic, or just where do you think Desi's at within the game just in general right now? Is she out there looking to make a kind of big move like that, or is she just along for the ride as far as you can tell?
So this would have been a much harder question to answer had Rourke not been voted out this week, I think, because what we saw and heard in Rourke's exit interviews was a lot of really revealing information about the initial state of that healer's tribe and just what was going on over there. And what we took away from that was apparently Joe and Desi, as I think most people suspected, were never that close initially, and it was only the two of them getting dumped on the same tribe together that really forced them to work as a pair. And had that Healer's Tribe gone to Tribal, there was this very convoluted plan to, like, get the votes rebound on Joe somehow, I think. But, like, they would tell him that they were going to split it, but then they were going to flash his idol or something. And apparently Desi would have been on board, and also Rourke was the one who told Desi about the idol. She wasn't included in that. So but my sense is Desi feels really no sense of loyalty to Joe at all, and this is a marriage of convenience for now, and they will get divorced as soon as Desi gets a chance to.
Yeah, because I could see that actually happening. I know I've said that I don't think this Blue Tribe will go back to another vote, but if they did, I feel like stranger things have certainly happened in post-swap scenarios than someone like Desi turning on someone like Joe, when it seems like Ashley and Devin are probably such calming and, like, stable people around camp, and Joe is this person she's been with since Desi has been with since day one, and it sounds like has not been thrilled to be, you know, on the same team as.
And speaking of which, shout out to Josh Baker for the hashtag Stranger Things Like That, which was really a highlight of the post Survivor Twitter on Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah. So if Desi does go on to make the merge, first of all, do you feel like there's any way she doesn't make the merge? Could Desi leave here anytime soon?
I'm trying to think. So I guess, I mean, we've only got four people left on this tribe now, so it's hard to even imagine who ends up with who. I guess if, yeah, I'm not seeing how it happens, right? Like, maybe Ashley and Devin vote for Joe and Desi vote for one of Ashley and Devin, and then they go to rocks or something, and Desi draws a rock? Does that...
Yeah, it's hard, at least. Well, we can certainly say it's hard to find a way, as far as I can tell, for Desi to be leaving anytime soon. But that being said, it's also, at this point, hard for me to imagine Desi being a big power player after the merge.
And also, I think if that were to happen, so if it's Joe and Desi versus Ashley and Devin, if the votes go on Joe, then I think Desi flips on the revote, and would not really have any reservations about that. If it's if they put their votes on Desi, then I guess it would be if Joe flips, then she would go. But I could see Joe thinking, like, okay, if Desi leaves her and we have to go to Tribal again, I'm gone, so maybe it's worth forcing a tie. And he seems like the type who, well, it's weird, like, he's not loyal to anyone, right? Joe is a type who I think would happily cut anyone to get himself further in the game. At the same time, no one would love the thought of the carnage caused by a rock draw more than Joe. So I could see that going either way.
Right. I think, you know, if this team went back to another tribal council, it would come down to which of these two air quotes pairs between Joe and Desi or Ashley and Devin could convince someone from the other side that they were dead serious about going to rocks on the other person's behalf. I frankly feel like the strongest pair on this tribe right now might be Ashley and Devin. And I think you're right that I don't think Desi would hesitate at all necessarily if she thought it was her or Joe who was going to leave. I think she would happily turn on Joe.
I wonder if Ashley, knowing that I think Ashley and Devin, as you say, aren't the strongest pair, but that's, again, only a matter of circumstance. I don't know if at the merge the two of them would still really have anything strong going. I wonder if Ashley is using this time to try and get close to Desi, knowing that that's someone who seemingly doesn't have many allies at the moment and could be someone in Ashley's back pocket that she can really use to her advantage going ahead.
Totally. I think that would 100% be the move. Not only, like you're saying, not only for post-merge, but also just in the event that you have to go back to another vote here. But I think that's definitely a great idea, is trying to get on, you know, get Desi on your side for sure. So I guess the only other person that we haven't talked too much about in depth is Devin on this tribe. I from what I am gathering, it sounds to me, at least the way that Ashley is framing it on the episode, like he would have, if he had been able to vote, sided with Ashley and Alan at that first vote. Have we heard if that is confirmed one way or the other? Did Alan say, oh, I know for sure how that would have gone?
I don't believe so, although if anyone knows more than us about that, please do write in and set us straight.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll find out whenever Devin ends up, or Ashley, or someone will. We'll eventually get that out there, but that may already be out there. I just don't know. Where do you feel like Devin is at this point? Because I think I would buy that he would stick with Ashley, and like I just said, I think they really are developing a solid bond, much more so than any other duo on this tribe.
I would be highly concerned if I was Devin, knowing that my closest ally, Ryan, is on another tribe. I know that he's someone who, he's not going to be all in on me, right? This is not going to be his only thing that he has going on in the game. He's going to try and make other stuff happen. He'll have side alliances. And he now has time away from me when I can't see anything that's going on to set that up. So even if he wants to take me back in at the merge, I'm always going to be one of many third wheels, and I don't know if I can get everyone together to overturn him if it comes down to that. Also, so he doesn't know what the ramifications are of Raw going home in terms of Ryan and Ali, right? Because it seems like Ali was on board with the two of them. Might not be the case now, and so that bridge could end up being burned by Ryan, and that could affect Devin, even though he had no part in that.
Totally, yeah, that's a great point. He has no idea, especially after this vote. I don't think he'll be able to imagine that Ryan and Ali, you know, we saw the preview for next time, that they're almost at each other's throats on the way back from this vote that we'll get to talk about later, when they ended up splitting up and Ryan turned and voted out Rourke. I would question how much Devin is really thinking about what Ryan is up to, though. I think Devin is probably thinking about just getting himself through to the next phase. I'm sure you're right that he is hopeful that he and Ryan can both make it there and come together again, but I don't think Devin is the type of player who's going to be all paranoid about all the other bonds Ryan is off making right now. If anything, I would say it's the other way around. I would say Ryan is probably now worried that Devin's going to like other people more than him or whatever.
I could imagine most people in that Cochrane-style archetype thinking that. I don't know if Ryan does, though, for as much as he wants to market himself as the successor to them. And there's no shame in doing that, given their success rate over time. But I don't know. I think Ryan seems to think that his social game is phenomenal. So I'm sure he thinks that he can rebound from whatever Devin ends up doing instead.
Yeah. Okay, well, I definitely, to just kind of wrap up, I think, on this Blue Tribe, because we didn't really get to see a whole lot from them this week. I would be surprised, honestly, if we get to see a whole lot from them next week either. My call for what we see out of the Blue Tribe next week is Joe finding an idol, and then not much more.
Mm-hmm.
So anything else you want to say about the Blue Tribe at this point?
Not really. So I think Joe, you look at the other personalities on the tribe. Ashley is fairly low key. Devin, as Ryan said, is so laid back, he's practically horizontal. And then Desi, I think, has some fire in her, but we never get to see it because we never get to see her at all. So Joe is really the one carrying that tribe in terms of strategy and entertainment at this stage.
Yeah. All right. So we will close the book on the blue team for this week. Let's move over to the red team. Just as a reminder, this is the healers majority team with Cole, Jessica, and Mike along here with Ben and Lauren. And this starts, Dom, with a really interesting scene where a piece of bamboo somehow like falls into the fire and it makes a very loud popping noise. And this triggers Ben, who we know is a Marine and a vet, who's been, you know, had some issues, I think, with some PTSD kind of stuff was the story of the episode. And we get a very long scene from Ben's perspective about all that he's been through just in his life and his experience as a veteran, and how important just, you know, looking towards the future is, and how building a great future for himself and his family is what he's motivated to be doing now. What do you think, I guess, about this scene? This is, I think, a really distinct, unique scene across the whole course of this season.
I love that scene, and I think Survivor actually has done a pretty good job in recent seasons of showing these deep personal moments, allowing people to have a voice on those issues in a way that I think most other shows wouldn't, or would, but in a way which feels exploited for entertainment. Whereas instead, we get to see Ben just like talk openly and sincerely about that experience and what triggers those memories for him and what effect that has on him. And I think that's a really useful scene to have out there just in the open, in public. And a lot of people I know on Twitter, for instance, really seem to resonate with them. If we want to get back to more grounded issues for a second, though, this is an amazing winner scene for Ben, right? Like, I don't think this is a shock to anyone. Don't need to put that in the edit zone. I think everyone will come together on that front.
No, actually, one of my great friends who is just a casual viewer of the show, Anna, big shout out to Anna, texted me when she was watching the episode. She watches the episode like 4 days later. That's how casual Anna is. She texted me, "Oh my God, like whatever about Ben, he obviously wins, right? Like even the most casual people are seeing through this kind of stuff by now." Although I will say, this reminded me a lot of Steven, actually, in Cambodia. I don't even, when he was talking about having to like overcome the Joey Amazing type throughout the, you know, just endless cycle of JTs that he talked about at the reunion, and struggling with that, and we got this like extended really like probably like 75 to 90 seconds in a row from Steven, the same way we did from Ben. And I think we probably got something similar from Adam in Millennials versus Gen X, really opening up about his mom. And these really stand out. Like, to me, this this is, I'm sure, going to be at the end of the season, one of the most memorable confessionals from over the course of the entire thing, and probably one of the most memorable confessionals for a really long time, because I just don't think we've seen anything like this on Survivor before. Have we really seen a vet really get into this kind of thing? Maybe we did. Did we see, did, like, Mike Chisel, did he ever get anything kind of along these lines? Am I making that up or what?
He really didn't. I think he was just the kind of one note golden boy the whole way through. I think the maybe the illustrative contrast would be with how the show handled Shamar, who I think was going through a lot of really rough stuff out there. Probably should not have been out there in the first place. But the way that his exit was handled by the show, many people at the time were saying was irresponsible and really didn't get into the underlying issues surrounding that.
Totally. Yeah, I think that's definitely. Shamar was also a Marine, right? I think that's totally fair. So, yeah, I'm with you, though, that this is, if we want to put it into the bigger picture, though, this is definitely good news for anyone who is invested in Ben. So let's, I guess, where do we, just Ben in general, I suppose, on this tribe. Again, we don't see him go to a tribal council here, but he is up against these three healers who have majority here. I'm guessing you don't feel like if they were to go to a tribal council, there would be any way Ben could leave?
I would struggle to see it. Although, so it I guess it really depends on how cutthroat Jessica is, actually, because she seems like she has Cole. She wants Cole wrapped around more than her little finger, but for now that's where he is. And I think she can really influence his vote. They are a power couple, if you want to use that phrase. And Mike, I think, for as much as we were speculating last week about, oh, what if Mike and Ben and Lauren all get together against the against Cole and Jessica, I think the three of them should remain solid for the time being. So they might think, well, Ben, as much as we all love him, and maybe because we all love him so much, he is a big threat, right? He has to go. He is the one person who could unify all of these very volatile and different personalities against us under one roof. So if you're looking at it from that angle, then I think Ben is maybe the obvious target, actually.
I think he, if they were to go to a tribal council and the healers were going to remain loyal and just try to play to get healers in a good position come merge time, I think it would be the no-brainer boot over Lauren.
I would almost want to throw a challenge now to boot Ben, knowing that it, like, even if the merge is delayed by a bit, we can just try to win out, and then if we're very confident that it's exactly one more challenge, we can just throw that and maybe boot Lauren too if we want to. Or yeah, at least we have that buffer there.
Yeah, I'm definitely with that. I think they should certainly be considering at least the idea of throwing to boot someone, as even as much as they like him. Like, that's why it's such a good idea, is he's going to be such a problem post-merge for them, which may be something that we go on to see play out this season. But Ben's position, as far as like within this tribe, as far as I can tell, he is just in there trying to hang out, stay on good terms with people, and not go to tribal council, which I think is a good plan if you are Ben here. So I guess let's get into, though, you just brought up Jessica, and I agree, she has really emerged as a power player here. She had already had this great bond going with Cole. He was trusting her with everything, and then although Cole trusts a lot of people with a lot of information around these parts, it also looks like, though, this week she and Mike have really started to emerge as a pair. They go digging, as I mentioned, for the idol, which Mike finds out by the well yet again. Apparently, Dom, by the way, this was in promotional material. Like, I guess they aired ads over the course of the week or whatever that showed Mike finding this idol, which thankfully I missed. But that's so almost unfathomable to me that they would do that. Why would they do that?
That is next level just bullshit preview misdirection, right? Like, at this point, they are really putting a lot of effort into trolling people with it.
Yeah. Well, any takes on just this Mike and Jessica power duo, especially now that it looks like Cole is doing a lot to play his way out of people's trust, and in the preview for next time, it looks like Cole's like fainting. Do we feel like Mike and Jessica might actually be the real healer's power duo?
As in just because something ends up happening to Cole, or because of Cole's own mistakes, or what?
Both, but because I think Cole is doing a good job of playing his way out of their trust, and because they've now found this idol together, and it seems like are you know, very like friendly seems to even be understating it. It seems like they are openly approaching each other as if they are very tight allies. But Mike and Jessica here, it seems to me like this is a pair to be on the lookout for.
Yeah, for sure. And so far, we haven't heard anything really from Mike's perspective, right? So we don't know how he feels about that. And when we see him just talking to people, he confesses to having a fairly neurotic personality. So you can never quite tell how confident he feels about other people. But so far, it seems like Jessica's the one person that he can really confide in.
Yeah. How do you feel about Mike now being a person with an idol in his possession? How do you see Mike viewing this kind of weapon within the game, especially knowing that Jessica already knows about it? Is he going to use this as a tool to bring people closer to him? Is he going to be trying to snipe someone out of the game? Or what's going on with Mike and his idol?
I honestly have no idea. And that's my favorite thing about him finding it, he could be the next David Wright and be using it proactively to try and boost his spot in the game. He could be holding it for the right time. He could end up trying to make a big move with it and it just blows up completely in his face and dooms his entire alliance. I don't know. But there are lots of fun outcomes that could lead to.
Yeah, I think Mike is generally probably going to be more of a team player with his idol than a lot of people might be inclined to be. And maybe that's because Jessica was with him when he found it, but he says to her, you know, this is an idol for us. And while I didn't even believe him in the moment that he meant that, I could see him down the line being the type to like be guilted into it. If he knows that they know he has an idol that he's considering using to help them or whatever, I could easily see Mike being like pressured into actually doing it, even if he doesn't really want to himself.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The only thing we really saw from Lauren on this team, she was complaining about Cole and how he eats everything and licks all the spoons and is a kind of a slob and how he's really digging a hole for himself, a coal hole, if you will. It's more Lauren content though, in an episode where once again, she does not leave. It seems like she's been relatively visible. How likely is it that Lauren actually ends up being a long-term player here?
It's looking increasingly likely, and I don't know if that's because she'll be a relevant player, but she might be the snarky confessional giver of the season, right? She could be the Courtney Yates for a modern day. Courtney Yates 20 years later.
She's Courtney Yates with a Maryland O accent, yeah, or Pennsylvania, wherever she's from. I
thought she was from Maine, wasn't she?
I don't believe
she's completely making that up.
I don't believe she's from Maine. I feel like I would have heard about it if she was from Maine, and that accent is definitely not from Maine. But anyway, I feel like Lauren is either going to go next week or not for a really long time. I think she's either going to leave pre-merge or be in there until like final seven at least.
Well, you got to go a bit further than final seven. Come on.
I will say she's leaving pre-merge or she is in there at final five, Dominic. Is that hyperbolic enough for you?
We've got like, what, 15 people left? Saying she's final seven is literally just a 50-50 split, right? Either it happens or it doesn't.
Okay, Dom. She either leaves pre-merge or she's a losing finalist. How about that? Is that enough for you?
Love it.
Okay, there you go. I think that is in play, by the way. Lauren, the potential losing finalist. I think that is for sure in play.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Any other... No, actually, I did think it was interesting. Again, this is a next time on Survivor thing, but when Cole faints, there's the Jessica voiceover saying, "I'm not ready to play this game without Cole." And while I don't think he's going to get medevaced or anything, I do wonder if her saying, "I'm not ready to play this game without Cole," could mean she's going to be playing this game without Cole sooner rather than later. And maybe there is some twisted universe where Mike, Ben, and Lauren come together and Cole gets booted from this tribe.
I'm struggling to see it, but I really hope I get to, because that would be good TV.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move on to our yellow team. This is, of course, Ryan and Allie. We have Chrissy and JP from the Heroes, and then Rourke in the middle, so, you know, on paper, from the Healers. And we haven't talked much about the challenges this week. Ryan, in this first challenge, the Coffee is for Closers challenge, really blows it for this team here. And incidentally, they're playing for a bunch of iced coffee, which would be like my number one draft choice reward if I was on Survivor. However, some of us, Jeff Probst, take our iced coffee black, and they put these giant jugs of this beige bullshit out there with clearly at least cream, maybe sugar already in it. I couldn't drink it if there was cream and sugar in my iced coffee. Like, I've spent 15 years drinking nothing but black coffee. I would be tilted out of my mind if my team won the iced coffee reward and it already had cream and sugar in it. It would be like winning hamburgers and loading it up with like tomatoes and mayonnaise and stuff that you couldn't pick off. I hate. Sorry.
The whole point of Survivor is to open you up to these unique new experiences. And so maybe for you, that's drinking not the same exact form of coffee that you've had for the past decade and a half.
I mean, I drink Dunkin' Donuts original brew coffee. I brew it at home. I brew an entire pot in the morning. I put it in my fridge. And when I get home from work, I have a giant thing of cold coffee ready to go.
This is going to sound like a very stupid question. Is Dunkin' Donuts a New England thing? Because I swear that no one other than like Boston specifically actually cares about Dunkin' Donuts.
Look at you, Dom Harvey. So it's not a New England only thing. It exists a lot of places, but it's relatively new out west. Like, I remember, I'm a big fan of a podcast called Doughboys. So I know that Dunkin' Donuts was founded in Quincy, Massachusetts, home of Mike the Spoon Man Mitchell. And it's a very New England thing. Like, it is strongly associated with New England, but they do have it all over the place.
Okay, so it actually wasn't a stupid question after all.
No, you were right on that it for a long time was just a New England thing, and now it has really recently branched out to other places. Actually, I did hear that the one that opened in like Utah, right at first had like 8-hour lines forever, and then within like 8 months was shut down because no one liked it.
Yeah, that actually doesn't shock me at all.
Yeah.
So when I went to Boston earlier in the year, I was told, oh, you have to go and see go to Dunkin' Donuts. And I was thinking, well, sure, I could just do that anywhere. I don't get why that's such a big deal. And I was even more surprised it was a big deal after I went to Dunkin' Donuts, because it was trash. It was horrible. But hey, different strokes for different folks.
Well, listen, I'm not here to advocate for their food or donuts or anything other than their original black coffee. It is the best coffee on the planet. Don't at me. All right. Anyway, Ryan blows the challenge because coffee is for closers, and Ryan apparently not a closer. But good news for Ryan, as you flagged up already, Dom, he gets back to camp and says, my strength is the social game. I need to really focus on the social game. My social game is everything. And interestingly, Ryan is torn between these two really great allies that he's come to have these great relationships with, in the form of course, Chrissy and Allie. And I thought it was interesting that they go so far as to show Ryan on the show saying, Chrissy and Allie will never work with each other. And I think this is an important quote for the remainder of the season, because I think Chrissy and Allie have been two of the people that we've been flagging up as like potential power players going forward. And so I think it's very worth noting that we have it laid out. These two are they do not like each other, and this is going to be a cause of friction going forward.
Yeah, I was speculating last week that I thought one of the big choices of the season would come down to Chrissy deciding between Ryan and Ben eventually. And I still think that's in play, certainly. But it looks like the earliest version of that choice that we get to see is Ryan choosing between Chrissy and Allie. And he ends up siding with Chrissy. Do you think that's a permanent choice now? Can he go back to Allie? Is that bridge permanently burnt? Or let's say they get to the merge, it makes sense on some level for them to work together again. Can they get past that and move on together?
I would say yes, that they would be able to, because I believe them both to be self-interested players. But I do think that the relationship is irreparably fractured, at least as far as Allie is concerned, where, and certainly if I was Allie, forget it. I'm never trusting Ryan fully again. If I didn't know that he was going to do this going into this vote, and he totally hung me out to dry, I just put my vote on Chrissy, and now we're both going back to camp together. If I was Allie, I would be totally willing to work with Ryan in the future if it made sense for both of us, but I would not be counting on him to be someone that would like have my back above all else if he didn't even, or, you know, even to a meaningful extent, if he didn't feel compelled to clue me in on what he was planning on doing with this vote when his choice rendered my vote completely irrelevant.
Yeah, I saw people tearing Ryan apart for making this choice, and I think it might actually be the correct one. What surprises me, though, is maybe the two of them were just so at each other's throats that it had to come down to this. There was no way of convincing Allie that you could go for something else instead. But to me, it feels like that argument of if we keep Rourke in the game, there are six healers, there's nothing we can do if they decide to stay together, that's a pretty powerful argument, even if it doesn't end up being true, and I don't think it would end up being true. That's a kind of classic, like, basic survivor logic, right? Like, you have this massive group that you can point to as the enemy that we all have to band together against. And so if he wasn't able to convince her of that, then... yeah, maybe it wasn't necessarily Annie versus Chrissy, but Annie plus Rourke together was such a strong unit that convincing Annie to turn on Rourke was never going to happen. And if you listen to some of Rourke's exit press, that seems to be the impression I get.
That may absolutely be the case. I still cannot possibly defend Ryan, at least before that tribal council. And I would frankly want to give Allie maybe an hour or so heads up, given that there's nothing she can do about it. I would not be leading her into that tribal council thinking that I'm going to keep Rourke and vote out Chrissy. I would tell her, I am not comfortable with these healers. I'm sorry, but I know Chrissy and JP are going to be voting for Rourke, and I'm going to be voting for Rourke too, and Rourke is not going to be here tomorrow. And if you want to be cool with Chrissy, you want to be voting for Rourke too, because that's where the majority is going tonight.
Yeah, it seems very unlikely that Allie has an idol. Even more unlikely that she has an idol that you don't know about personally. Mm-hmm. And so even if there is some worry about that, I think you can just afford to tell her, and you should tell her if that's the decision that you know you're going to make.
Right, exactly. I think that could definitely be something that comes back to bite Ryan. But as far as their relationship going forward, like I said, I suspect that if they get into a situation where it obviously makes sense for both of them to come together, I don't think there would be reluctance on either of their parts to do that. I just think there would be a lot of reluctance, particularly on Allie's part, of, you know, going to the merge and then locking in like a final three deal or whatever. I don't think that's going to be happening anytime soon. But they definitely seem like smart enough, frankly, players to be willing to put aside whatever has happened in the past if it means they can both use each other to advance their own position going forward. So I guess let's get a bit further into just Ryan's decision here and his move to not only not tell Allie, but just to side with Chrissy in the first place. I was thinking about, does this happen if not for that day one advantage? Like, does Ryan bond well enough with Chrissy that he feels great about flipping on Allie and keeping her safe if he doesn't know that she has a really solid reason to feel a lot of gratitude towards him?
Absolutely not, as far as I'm concerned. And it struck me the other day that this is essentially his version of the Allie and Patrick bond, right? Like, it's something which only they have access to that no one else knows about, and which actually could end up playing a big part in the game. We saw Allie turn on Patrick because the entire tribe wanted to turn on Patrick. And great job, Patrick, by the way, for somehow, despite having like a close friend from outside the game in the game with you, not being able to move past that. But I think this was entirely dependent on that advantage. And I also think it's entirely dependent upon JP somehow being on that tribe, right? Because if it's not JP, if it's someone who Chrissy doesn't have that existing bond with, and you don't know that the two of them are going to vote together, then I don't think Ryan jumps ship to be with the two of them if you don't have that third vote in place. So even though JP is the safest player in the game and maybe the least relevant player in the game at the time being, he may have actually played a big part accidentally without even knowing it in how this vote went down.
Okay, well, the TV episode made it seem, as far as I could tell, like, from Chrissy's perspective, I'm not a pair with JP, so my plan to get JP on board is tell him there's an all-girls alliance that is coming after him, and then he'll immediately be down to vote out Rourke. And we see she gives a confessional laying that plan out, and then 3 seconds into the next scene with JP, he's on board with that plan. And so it really does seem like I wouldn't have called them a pair, but you're right that it does probably require Ryan knowing that that third vote is definitely locked in. But I would imagine, I don't think it's specific to JP that he would feel good about that. I honestly think almost anyone would be a good person if the other two people are Allie and Rourke. I think he's almost always going to choose Chrissy and anyone else over those two.
You could be right, but it felt like JP in particular did not need that much persuading.
Okay. That's certainly true that JP did not need that much persuading. But what are you going to do when you're already the safest guy on the tribe, right, Dom? So I guess let's get into just Rourke and her position here. We had speculated that in last week's podcast, the Healers having majorities as far as what it looks like on paper on both of the other teams now could definitely mean bad news for Rourke. And we see her echo that same sentiment where she says, I'm objectively on the outside. I theoretically love a 2-2-1 split, but we can certainly see that this is not going to play out like it should on paper, where she's going to be the swing vote. It really seems to me like that Healer's target is going to be almost impossible to overcome, right?
I have to think so. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was thinking about this. I don't know what Rourke did wrong necessarily. Like, I was thinking, Jessica Lewis and David Bloomberg, congratulations, you got the easiest podcast of your career. How Rourke lost is she swapped poorly. Like, she's just the latest person to swap poorly. I was thinking, the thought started as, tell me the difference between Rourke here and how it would go for Sophie Clark here. I don't think it would be any different. And then I thought, could Kim Spradlin get out of this swap?
Come on, that's a hot take.
You're right. Kim probably could, but I did think to myself, and I almost brought this up when you were talking about Ben's position on his team. I was thinking Boston Rob for sure could not get out of Rourke's spot here if he was if he was viewed as like the leader of his team that had been running the table and now they had a clean shot at him. And it made me realize in Boston Rob's four seasons, he essentially never had to deal with a swap, which is a huge spot where I think Boston Rob is very vulnerable in a game of Survivor, because he's so overtly the leader of his tribe during all of the early challenges that as soon as he swaps poorly, he's the first one gone every time. And he just never had to deal with a swap. The one time in his four seasons that they tried to swap them, his entire tribe drew the same color buff.
I think there is a decent chance. Well, you can question how engineered that was, to put it mildly, but there are some conspiracy theories out there around that. But I think he at least has a good chance of, depending on how aware the other people that he's on this new tribe with are, of getting them on board with him and avoiding that. But I think in this specific case, it's almost become a cliche to say, oh, the person who was the preseason favorite just happened to swap badly, and that's why they got out. Notably, the beloved Anna Kate. But you think in this case, this actually has merit. That's why she lost.
Totally. I think that is totally why Rourke lost. Like, I'll go back to the original question. Does Sophie Clark get out of it? What's the difference between Rourke and Sophie Clark, as far as you can tell? Because as far as I can tell, it is not a big one.
They're saying they're just entirely the same person. There's no difference, no nuance there at all.
I'm not saying they're entirely the same person, but I'm saying just the what they bring to Survivor and their skill for – like, I have no issue, frankly, saying I don't think Sophie is that – I can't say that I think Sophie is that much better of a player than Rourke. I think Rourke just got tremendously unlucky.
Well, okay. I know what most of the feedback is going to be about this week then.
I don't care – one way or another, I have no skin in this game. I as far as wanting to like pump Rourke up as some great Survivor player, I just don't see what she did really wrong. Can you explain to me what Rourke did so wrong here?
Well, no, I can't. But that doesn't mean that, but because she got screwed over in a certain way, therefore she must be a great player who just some random factor had to come in and end her game.
I am not saying Rourke is I am not saying Rourke is as good a Survivor player as Sophie Clark. I'm saying show me the difference between Rourke and Sophie. Show me some kind of conclusive difference as Survivor players between Rourke and Sophie Clark other than their results.
I don't know, personality, situation, maybe challengeability. Take your pick. There are lots of arguments you can make there.
Okay. Well, I already regret going down that rabbit hole. So let's just move on as quickly as possible from that. And Rourke, I would say, not a good tribal council. Like they really went hard sell here on trying to make it look like Chrissy would leave. I was not particularly biting on that. But it's certainly by the time Tribal Council rolled around and Rourke was getting so many over-the-top, kind of like overconfident, snarky clips left in, that Rourke's torch was snuffed for me at like 8:49.
Yeah, very little doubt about the eventual outcome here. I wasn't even paying that much attention to the episode that was happening. And I could tell, like, Rourke's card is marked. This is over for her.
Yeah, I actually do want to give a shout out to great friend of the podcast, Brian Gold, who correctly called on Twitter at like 8:42 or whatever. He said, I think Ryan is going to go rogue here and not tell Allie that he votes Rourke out. And I thought that was a great theory in the moment, and it obviously came in. So very strong work there by Brian. And I do just think though, it is interesting that Ryan is the type of player who would go and do something like this. Like, I really feel like Ryan, Mr. Social Game, would have wanted to make sure Allie did in fact know about how he was going to be voting that night and make sure they were on the same page to, you know, so that no matter how the vote went, everyone who was going back to camp that night was cool with him. It really did surprise me to see Ryan go through with something like this. And maybe that'll be another theme over the course of the season. Maybe there is a lot more to Ryan as a gamer than I'm giving him credit for right now. But I would say that it's based on what we've seen so far, it's probably going to be more costly than helpful for him if he does make it to a final tribal council situation. It seems like he's going the wrong way about it.
I know we covered some of this ground already, but do you like his choice? And do you think, if you do like his choice, it was made for the right reasons, as far as we can tell?
I definitely do like his choice of you have to be sitting there saying, if we don't get rid of a healer and the only one is Rourke, there is a very real possibility that they're going to have huge numbers at the merge, and I'm not going to let that happen. The same way I would say, actually, I believe it was the Anna Kate Tribal Council, where they know Julia is coming in off of exile to replace whoever they vote out. There is no consideration other than voting off someone from the Beauty Tribe. It must be Anna Kate or Ty. There is no other way around it. I would feel almost equally that strongly about sending whatever healer it was on my tribe home this round. So I do think it is the right idea. However, I do not think it is the right execution. As I've pointed out a bunch of times, I would have told Allie that this was what was going to happen. And I know she may not be someone who likes it when you say, look, I'm deciding unilaterally for the both of us that Chrissy is going to stay tonight when you want her to leave. But frankly, there's nothing Allie can do about it at that point. And I think the longer term benefit is having her know instead of having her blindsided at that vote and really putting herself out there.
Yeah, the argument I've seen is that if you vote off Chrissy, then either way, you're betraying someone, right? But if you vote off Chrissy, then the person you've betrayed is out of the game. You don't have to deal with them anymore. Your secrets are buried with them. Whereas if you vote off Rourke, then the person you've betrayed is Allie, who is still in the game, who you know is a dangerous player. That's part of why you want to team up with her. And if she is now against you for good, then that's something very concerning that you have to deal with now going ahead.
Yeah.
But I think I agree with you that you just have to. I think it is the right choice, and you have to sell that a lot better to Allie and in general, just to make it work. You have to find a way to do that.
Maybe he likes that Allie and Chrissy are at each other's throat. Maybe he thinks this is a good thing. Like, if I'm not going to be able to get them to come together, maybe I do want to like play up this, you know, whatever the vibe is. What's the word I'm looking for? This kind of tension between the two of them.
Yeah, although so. You often see that people who get betrayed by a former ally feel a lot more angry towards that person than they do towards the people they were against in the first place, because there's that sense of betrayal there that just really amps everything up.
Right. So in this case, it would be, I have no problem with Chrissy and JP for voting not the way I wanted them to, but Ryan, you were supposed to vote with
me. Yeah, exactly.
Right, yeah. I guess we saw a little bit in the preview that there's going to be some kind of fallout, that Allie's going to get back and not be thrilled with Ryan. But if they do end up going to another vote, I guess, how do you see this yellow team ending up going? Do you think Ryan would stick with Chrissy and JP and just torch Allie right there? Or I guess detorch Allie right there?
I think so. Maybe he gets fancy and tries to convince Chrissy to vote out JP, but that seems like a really hard sell.
I'm not sold that Chrissy and JP are a pair.
I think they are, at least in the minds of JP, and therefore they are a pair for Chrissy, because that's just a reliable vote. And on a four-person tribe now, that's all you can really ask for. But I think Chrissy basically lays down the ultimatum to Ryan of saying, look, you voted with us. We have a good thing going. You're my closest ally. We have a secret alliance that people don't really know about. I'm voting for Allie, obviously. So is JP. And if you want to force rocks just to flip back against me now, then yeah, go ahead, but that's not going to get you anywhere.
Yeah, and maybe the fallout that we see, Ryan is not thrilled with Allie's reaction to his flip, and he's ready to just send her out right away. Maybe they go so far as to like lose the challenge. And actually, that's an interesting question, is if you're Allie and you get back to camp, why are you yelling at the majority of people? Like, what are you doing?
If you want to convince Ryan to throw a challenge around to get you out because he thinks that there's no repairing that relationship, then this is a good way to do that.
Exactly.
So is this something which, if they don't do that, you think could be a longer-term storyline now, where Allie is waiting for her chance to get revenge and eventually finds it when she can maybe link up with some of these healers, or maybe, I don't know, Ben or whoever else is out there for the taking?
Oh, yeah, I for sure think a scorned Allie could be a major storyline if she ends up making it to the Merge. And I've also thought that Allie might actually be a good Merge boot pick if she is viewed as kind of the big person who has it out for whatever ends up forming around, I'm guessing, Chrissy and Ryan and probably Ben in there as well. But I am forecasting at least that Allie will be there at the Merge, and I'm looking forward to seeing how all of that goes. And I do think if anyone can recover from this, Allie would be a good pick. Like, we've seen her big pitch to Rourke was, I want to get in with you and the healers come Merge time, because she knows how important that Merge vote is, and I definitely think Allie is willing to work with essentially whomever is going to get her further over the course of the game. So that could definitely be very interesting to be on the lookout for. All right. Any other parting thoughts on Rourke other than that you hate her and don't think she could ever win Survivor because she's not Sophie Clark?
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Okay.
No, I really liked Rourke. I think that there will be lots of people who say that she has Kelly Wentworth upside or whoever else upside you might prefer in there. And I think I agree. I think we could see Rourke maybe. Well, I don't think we'll see her come back. But if she did, I think she would have a decent chance of doing well. More so than any of your other random favorites who were never going to do well and you were delusional to everything they could.
Yeah, we need season 37, Rourke versus Mari Takahashi.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. All right. I guess, let's send it over to the edit zone. And for this week, we actually got an email submission.
Hold on. So proper procedure now. Are we going to do the plugs before the edit zone?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So before we get into the edit zone, for the people who are not interested in hearing all the edit discussion, this would be the spot to tune out. You can, of course, follow Dom on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. You can email us, domandcolin@gmail.com, which someone just did earlier today, actually, with an edit zone intro, like a bump for the edit zone that we're going to use to lead into the edit zone. And I will say, if you want to make we not only need bumps for our usual segments, but also we could use intro music. Like, if someone wants to write some instrumental intro thing for us, we would definitely be willing to have an intro song. It feels weird having just nothing at the start of the show.
It really does. I like the kind of minimalist aesthetic that we have going on, but at the same time, a basic degree of professionalism after 6 years might be in order at some point.
Yeah, there was like a solid year and a half, 2 year stretch where whatever the thing was we were talking about that day, I would pick out some kind of piece of music that was either the title or the band was like loosely related to whatever the subject matter was at hand or whatever had happened in the episode that we were talking about or whatever. But now that we're doing the Patreon thing, I feel very nervous about blatantly just stealing other people's music. So I've stopped doing that. But yeah, if you, I suppose, want to put in any submissions for bumps or for an intro, get at us, domandcolin@gmail.com. All right. So we will, I guess, see you once we hit the edit zone, which is coming now. You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Mike Holloway.
Michelle Ken. Brad Culpepper. You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Tune out now.
So there you go. And incidentally, big thank you to Jonathan Clark for that Edit Zone drop. Now, Dom, let's get into it here. And we've already talked a little bit about this earlier in the episode, but we are certainly on the same page. Number one contender coming out of this week has to be Ben, right? And I'm going to ask you, let's get the hot takes rolling right away. Ben or The Field must win?
Oh, okay. The Field, obviously.
Obviously?
Oh, maybe not so obvious, actually. Well, I'm so gun-shy now about declaring anyone as the overwhelming favorite this early after everything that's happened. After everything that's happened to you, how are you not? How are you so eager to do that? But I can't really put a good argument against it. Like, Ben has to be. So I think he's certainly at the forefront of most viewers' minds, and those viewers love him. And that's what more can you really ask for at this stage of the game?
Yeah, I think Ben versus the field, it's certainly not a like slam dunk bet the farm. I don't think it's that far off, though. I would say Ben has a solid 40% equity for me. Like I bet last week in the edit zone, you did not want to take this bet, but we did get a listener, Morgan Eastwood, one of the patrons, willing to take my action. I wanted 2-1 that both Ben and Chrissy are in the finals. I have put up 20 to win $40 with Morgan Eastwood that both Ben and Chrissy are in the finals. I would say the two of them combined are a obvious no-brainer, Ben or Chrissy against the field. I would say the two of them combined have easily 75% equity for me, easily.
Yeah, so if you have Ben as this massive favorite, do you think Chrissy has to be there with him? Or because it seemed like Chrissy might be one of his tougher opponents. Or is it like Ben beats anyone and storyline or edit-wise, Chrissy is likely to be there with him, and so that's how both of their stories end, with Chrissy as a losing finalist?
That it's because Chrissy seems like one of the tougher people at this point for him to beat that I think she is the one in there with him, because as I've flagged up in previous edit zones, it really seems like the last four seasons were sequentially the story of Jeremy and Spencer with a side of Wentworth. Then we got the story of Aubrey and Michelle, and then we got the story of Adam and Ken with a side of David. And then last season we got the story of Brad Culpepper and the story of Sarah, and all of those people made the finals. And I think Ben and Chrissy are this year's compelling finalists. Like, that seems to be the new way they edit the seasons, is they threw out the Mike Holloway mold of making only the winner look great. They started making the winner and eventual compelling losing finalist look good too, up until the very end, right before they're about to lose.
Which I think is a decent change on some level, because you don't want to have an obvious blowout in the final three. At the same time, if those are the only two people who are receiving that kind of focus, you can lock at least two of the final three in just way in advance, and that's certainly not good.
Right, that's why I didn't want to bet Ben or specifically wins, or Chrissy specifically wins. That's why I wanted to make the bet these two are in the finals. That's what I think is the new story arc.
And notably, during the great Michelle versus Aubrey debates of 2016, that was something which, because that trend hadn't fully developed yet, we didn't pick up on at the time. We were assuming, okay, Michelle is going to win, therefore that means Aubrey probably has to come in fourth, because surely she can't be a losing finalist. But the way that things are going now, I would almost say that's the more likely outcome of whoever we think has to be the fourth place finisher and can't lose in the finals. There's going to be a way they lose in the finals somehow, right? Yeah. Something's going to go wrong at the end.
I found out after the fact about Ko Rong that it was spoiled that Aubrey was in the finals, that they knew the final three. And if you want any evidence of how unspoiled I've always been, like, I would never have been making proclamations that bold if I had known Aubrey was actually going to be in there. I thought it was she couldn't conceivably be in there, and that's why she was looking so good. But it has become the new kind of thing where they make the compelling finalist look almost identical to a winner, as far as I can tell, for the first like 12 and a half episodes of a season, for the most part. Ken faded a bit near the end there, which many people have been happy to point out to me over the last year or so. But other than that, I think they've been really good at setting up a compelling reason to be rooting for a person who eventually does not end up winning, but does end up making it to the finals and coming close. And in this case, I don't know which way it's going to go, but I'm really thinking that that is going to be the combination of Ben and Chrissy. So where do you have Ben, I guess, as far as winner equity is concerned? I know we don't even need to get into why. Like, we've already talked about it. All you have to do is watch that PTSD scene. Yeah, exactly.
I feel like any explanation couldn't really do it justice. You just watch the episode instead, and it's pretty obvious.
But my question is, if you're giving Ben solidly less than 50%, who's getting the rest of it?
I don't know. I guess
it's got to go somewhere.
Chrissy there. Maybe Ryan has a bit. Maybe Jessica has a bit actually too. But yeah, Ben, he has to be the front runner, at least until someone else emerges. I could see things getting shaken up in the next few weeks where some other contenders emerge, but for now, it just has to be Ben.
Right? Right. I would say, like, my rough numbers right now would be, like, Ben 40 to 45, Chrissy 30 to 35, Allie maybe 10%, Ryan maybe 10%, and then whatever is left, maybe like the last 10% or whatever, split up between like Ashley and Jessica, probably. I think they're both hovering in the like 5 to 10% range, but I really think the lion's share has to go to Ben and Chrissy collectively at this point.
So do you know, and this is, I don't know if we need a separate zone within the zone for like stuff that's outside the scope of the edit, but do we know how much hype there's been around the season from like Jeff and production and so on?
I do not know. I do not want to know. I do everything possible to avoid any kind of Jeff Probst content once he knows how the season has played out. Don't tweet me about what Jeff says. Yeah. I hate it.
Absolutely co-sign that. To me, that is on another level of semi-spoilerishness. It just goes into outright spoiler territory
right.
at some point.
This has always been my defense, and I frankly, like, it does somewhat bother me that we have to do this edit zone for the fucking children that cannot handle this kind of discussion. But what we talk about, this is why I'm okay with it. Everything we talk about airs on CBS in primetime. That is fair game for discussion, as far as I'm concerned.
All the people who are offended by that, I still love you. Please don't.
No, this is, we're in the edit zone. The children have tuned out.
Well, some of them might just be hate listening to it, or they might stumble upon it by mistake. I don't know. But in any case, you are valued. You are loved. Never doubt that. Never doubt your place in the world.
The people who object to talking about Survivor in intelligent, thinking adult terms are children. That is my stance on it.
They might like that kind of content when it concerns the game itself and not like the metagame of discussing the edit.
Okay, I would argue that goes hand in hand with the way that we do a lot, the way we've always done this podcast. But nonetheless, we're in the safe zone now. We're in the safe space. Okay. It's not worth going down.
Anyway, the point of me asking that was that I imagine if there is a noticeable lack of hype from Jeff around the season, and again, don't tell us whether that is or not, then that would lean heavily against a Ben win, because Ben is basically the literal perfect Survivor winner for their target audience.
I think that is a great point. If I knew that Jeff was super in love with this season, I would be higher on Ben. And if I knew that he was not, if he was trying to temper expectations for this season, it would drastically knock down my percentage of Ben. And again, that's why I do not ever want to know what Jeff Probst is saying about a season as it's airing when he already knows the results. Ever. Don't please stop tweeting me about it, because that really does feel like by far the most spoilerish stuff is Jeff Probst interviews. All right, so I guess let's bounce around. Let's go into Chrissy just a little more. I'm wondering what you made of Chrissy in this immunity challenge, not being willing to step down from the kind of like maze puzzle thing. Jeff really laying it on about how she, almost like borderline selfish she was being, or what did you make of how that looked for Chrissy?
Yeah, that's what makes me buy into this theory that I know you are fully on board with now of Ben and Chrissy in the finals, because this to me feels like the exact kind of tinge that you put on a losing finalist edit to show why people might feel that they're a bit grating, might not want to vote for them at the end, why they might take a wrong turn in the game, as opposed to whoever they end up losing to, who is going to be painted in a much better light, I imagine.
Yeah, I think that is spot on. It's kind of the same thing we saw... I would say about like Don Meehan over the course of Caramoan, where they just would work in these little reasons why people wouldn't like her, and then ultimately build up to Brenda, Dom's favorite Survivor player of all time, the most robbed goddess. Anyway, so Chrissy, where are you putting Chrissy? Is she, how far ahead of the rest of the pack is she for you, or are you looking more at like losing finalist?
I'm looking at losing finalists. I think second place, both in the game and in the edit power rankings at this stage.
Okay, because I would still say yes. I think. Ben over Chrissy in the finals would be my number one outcome right now, but if it's not that, I would say Chrissy over Ben would be my number two outcome. I think Chrissy is still the number two winner candidate at this point. And by the way, I wanted to save this for the edit zone. During this whole week's episode, there was no sweat whatsoever that Chrissy might leave, because we never heard a word about that useless idol that they've made a point of continuing to bring up well after it had any actual power within the game. Until we see that thing brought up, if it's not brought up in previously on Survivor, Chrissy cannot leave that night. That's what I'm putting out there. If that idol is not brought up in the previously on, lock in that Chrissy is safe.
So if someone is wanting to make a bet with you at 5 minutes past the hour on a Wednesday night, then you would happily just be all in, bet your life savings on Chrissy cannot go home.
This is the problem for me, is lately I've been missing the previously on Survivor. I'll turn my TV on at like 7:55 and put it on mute because it's on like Two Broke Girls or whatever, and just silence is better than that. And then I'll look over and it's 8:01 and they've already started the first scene of whatever. I'll get like, because I'll get like distracted on my computer or whatever, getting ready to live tweet, getting all excited for that. That's a big fun event. All right. So who else do we want to be looking at here? How about Allie, who I think had a, what I'm going to say, not great episode here, where she's shown, I think, crucially going after Chrissy and not being successful. I think that's a really big mark against her, is targeting the person that I think they know America loves.
Yeah, not the best. And it looks like the next episode is not going to be that much better. So I'm doubtful that she's going to be a long-term contender at this point. I think she's going to be, as you say, a merge boot or someone who is set up for a big downfall. Now, you said she's going after the person that everyone loves. Is that Chrissy? You think that everyone loves Chrissy?
I think a lot of people at home really are rooting for Chrissy, yes.
Well, because this is coming off the back of us saying Chrissy was getting this subtle, or maybe not so subtle, negative treatment that's designed to set her up as a potential loser.
Well, yes, she got that 2 minutes, during the immunity challenge, where she was overly competitive and didn't want to come out or whatever. But I think the general CBS viewer, which is the impression that matters, as far as I can tell, is a big fan of Chrissy, I would think, through the first several episodes, and would not like Chrissy being targeted here, especially, I would say, when compared to Rourke, who was not presented in so many glowing terms over the course of this season. I think the vast, vast majority of casual viewers were rooting hard for Chrissy to stay around here.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, Allie is the driving force trying to get her out. I don't think that's good.
Well, as someone with a direct line to the casual viewer base, you have a much better idea of this than I do. But so I'll take your word for that.
Okay. That being said, though, are you still into the idea that Allie could rebound and, use some of that game savvy that we've seen so far to come merge time, form some new coalition and get through here?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm definitely not counting her out, and I don't want to count her out. She's still one of my favorites in a game sense and just to root for as a player.
Okay. Where are you on Ryan at this point now after this big move?
I don't think the show really took a stance on whether this move was correct or not, right? Like, it was just a big move that he made. He got to explain it, and it was presented as his core, and we get to hear so often about how good his social game is and how much that means to him. So the edit is really doing nothing to contradict that so far. So I guess, aside from the face planting and the challenges, it's all looking good for Ryan.
Yeah, I'm believing in Ryan more than I'm believing in Allie, I would say, at this point. But that being said, I don't think I see him as the eventual winner, although we did get, as you flagged up, a lot of emphasis on his social game, which is exactly the same that we saw from Sarah last season about how phenomenal that was. So maybe that is a good thing. Like, it does seem like if he were to win, this is how he would look to this point. And so that's why I'm definitely still leaving him in here with a chance. But that being said, I'm getting more of a David Wright kind of vibe, where he's going to go deep and make some really important decisions and maybe even be a very legitimate winner candidate that people just recognize we have to get rid of by the time the end of the game rolls around. But I at this point would definitely have Ryan a lot lower than I would both Chrissy and Ben. And I would say he is my number three. And that's why I'm just so high. I feel like they have to have so much of the equity because I just don't know where else I can put it. But some of the other places that equity might go, Dom. How about Ashley? And I'm going to say the same thing that I just said about Ryan and that you said about Ashley last week, which is, if she did win, would it look much different than this?
No.
Are you still on board with that? Are you still liking Ashley?
Sure. Okay. Nothing much more to say, really.
Well, do you? I don't know how many people she's on, radar she's on as a potential winner, but would you be giving her? For me, she's in that like 5 to 10% range. Is that about right for you?
Yeah, that sounds perfectly fair.
All right. Hashtag analysis there from Dom. Anyone else on your radar here? Is Mike popping up for you, or are you? I saw Taryn tweet out when Mike finally got some visibility. Oh, cool. Mike's finally getting some visibility. Oh, wait. It's because he found an idol and they're giving him the bare minimum.
Yeah, I would say so. There was a lot of hype over Rourke after the premiere because she was a fan favorite coming in. She had a big first episode. She was fairly quiet for a bit, but after this most recent episode, she got a lot of confessionals. She got to explain her place in the game. She was involved in a big blindside. I'm thinking it's really looking up for Rourke.
I was almost going to jokingly bring up at the end of the podcast, and how do you feel? I still feel like Rourke is still really in here with a chance. So I'm glad that we were on the same wavelength there. How about... Are you feeling like Devon's got a chance? I know you mentioned Jessica as someone you have your eye on. Who else is getting...
Jessica is on, like, the outside orbit for me. She's still in there with the show. I think Devon is out for the count.
Okay, so Devon is like Pluto, where he's no longer a planet. He was once a planet, and she's, like, whatever the next for the Saturn? I don't know the order.
Uranus and Neptune in some order.
Okay, I don't know. Neptune, I think, is the furthest one out there. Jessica is Neptune. Okay.
And Cole is Uranus, basically.
All right. Watch it, Dom. How about Lauren? Which planet is Lauren? Or is she the sun where everything's just revolving around her?
She's off in her own galaxy somewhere, I think.
Okay. Well, I guess that... I mean, I don't have anything else that I want to be getting out there. Anything that you wanted to put out there? Or did we skip anything?
No, I'm all good.
All right. Well, I guess until next week, you can once again be following Dom on Twitter at DomHRV. I don't know why anyone would do that, but there he is. I am, of course, at Colin Stone. Email us, domandcolin@gmail.com. I'm sure, we will have plenty more coming very soon. I think BB7, week 6 in the next couple of days. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Did we plug the Miles Nye podcast at any point?
I think we did last week, but in case anyone missed that, of course,
Was it out this time last week?
Yeah, I think so. We at least plugged it. In case anyone missed that, I don't think it was out this time last week, but it was out. We recorded in time to know to plug that. So I think that's been plugged, but we'll do it again. Dom and Miles Nye, I just did a podcast that I very much enjoyed listening to primarily about South Korean TV and just reality game challenge design in general. Of course, Miles has done a lot of work on the Survivor challenges, so that was a great time to listen to.
Yeah, lots of fun stuff there. And even if you did listen to that, I know a lot of listeners reported that it was cutting off towards the end, and it seemed like on... For some people, a good 20-30 minutes of the ending there was cut out. So I've gone over and fixed that. Let me know if that's still occurring for you. But if that was a problem before, then there's a good extra half an hour of Miles Nye in good form that you'll want to listen to there as well at the end.
Oh, okay. Excellent. So be on the lookout for the updated version, I suppose, in your iTunes feed or wherever else. As I said, we will be back soon with more BB7, carrying along that rewatch for the Patreon series. If you want to find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron, go to patreon.com/DomandColin. I think that's going to do it. So until next week, we will talk to you very soon. Take care, everybody.